Okay guys, thanks a lot for coming to Vista Squad this month. I know it's a little more short notice than we normally are. So many new faces here. All I want to really say is thanks a lot for coming. Thanks to Scott for coming, and I hope you guys enjoy the ASPNBC talk. Quick bit of housekeeping. If the fire alarm does sound, please calmly make your way out of the building. And there's an exit to your right-hand side that leads you guys out to the car park. Failing that, enjoy the show. We do have a break at 2:30 for drinks and refreshments outside before we come in for part two and questions. Okay, over to Scott.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Yeah. Great. First, thanks a bunch for coming out. I know for a lot of people, probably on very short notice. I think we have about 2 hours of content. We have a break coming up in about an hour. So we have some coffee and tea outside. So what I'm going to do is basically try to get to a natural logical breaking point, or at least a point where someone starts waving at me and I'm running out of time, and then we'll actually break the coffee and tea for about half an hour, and then come back the second half. A little about me. My name is Scott Guthrie. I work in the developer division at Microsoft. And I run some of the teams that build .NET and VS. So specifically, I run the teams that build kind of common language runtime and our core base class libraries, both for desktop as well as for mobile. And then I run the teams that build ASP.NET, Silverlight, WPF, IIS, Media Server, and Commerce Server, and then our Visual Studio tools for doing web and client development. So what I'm going to do is spend to a few things. But what I'm going to do is, and my email address here is scottgu@microsoft.com, and my blog is webblogs.com/scottgu. So if you have any questions, I'm going to try to leave plenty of time at the end. What I'd recommend is if you could actually ask the questions during the talk, that would be ideal if possible, because then there's the most context for different folks. If I think we're getting slightly off track, I might postpone a few questions till the end. But for the most part, hopefully we can make it interactive. I hopefully have a fun kind of next 2 hours talking about ASP.NET MVC. Quick poll of hands. How many people are actually using ASP.NET MVC? Cool. How many people have heard of ASP.NET MVC? How many people are here for this free coffee? Yeah, there we go. There's an honest person now. Cool. Well, so kind of what is this ASP.NET MVC thing? One of the key things, so ASP.NET MVC is a new option for ASP.NET development. We shipped the first release of it, I think, in March of this year. We're actually going to start starting a preview for ASP.NET MVC 2 probably in the next month, or no, it's July, so probably, either later this month or early in August. And at a high level, it basically gives you another option for doing ASP.NET based development. So when we first launched ASP.NET, we had introduced a model we call the WebForms model. It still continues to be a key model for ASP.NET. One of the big takeaway points I want to make sure no one leaves confused about is that ASP.NET MVC does not replace WebForms. It isn't something you should go to or have to go to. It's another option. And it's kind of an option that fits into the overall ASP.NET category or family. It uses the same core ASP.NET runtime, so all the same intrinsics, things like caching, security, configuration, state management, profile, membership roles, all that stuff stays exactly the same with ASP.NET MVC, but it basically gives you an alternative when you're doing UI construction and a different approach to do. And hopefully at the end of the next 2 hours, I'll leave you either with, oh, this sounds interesting, I might actually use it, or I might leave you with, oh, I'm glad I actually learned more and I've decided I don't want to use it. Both of those two options are perfectly fine. So again, it's not something that you have to go to. It is just an option. A lot of people do like it. A lot of people are very evangelical about it. But at the same time, a lot of people say, it doesn't actually interest me, or I actually find myself much more productive with web forms, and that's great too. Why people typically do find ASP.NET MVC attractive, or some people do find it attractive, is that it gives you a couple of additional kind of what I call power options or additional flexibility points as a web developer. It gives you more control over your HTML. Again, this is both a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing in the sense of you can construct that HTML to look however you like. It also means that with that power, you also get to construct your HTML however you like. And so sometimes people will say, well, I find I have to write more code for my UI. than if I just use a data-driven control, it would do it for me. So again, it's both a positive and a negative. But if you're someone who likes to control exactly the markup that gets emitted inside your page, you'll typically find ASP.NET MVC kind of an attractive option. Gives you very intuitive website URLs. So you can basically publish whatever URL format you want from within your site. We'll walk through that a little bit later. One of the benefits of this is if you want to optimize for search engines, so if you want to do SEO or search engine optimization, ASP.NET MVC gives you a lot of power and capabilities for doing that. You can also take advantage of richer client-side JavaScript integration because you can control your HTML very closely. You can do some powerful client-side Ajax techniques with MVC. And then MVC also gives you testability and what we call TDD, or test-driven development support. So if you want to build unit tests for your applications, it ends up being fairly easy to do with MVC. And so if you're using like an agile-based methodology or any type of workflow where you want to have unit tests be a core part of your job, MVC is also a good fit for you. How many people here are doing unit tests? Cool. How many people are really doing unit tests? Okay, cool. Yours is like one of those things where it's like, yeah, I worked out. once a year, I mean, you know, whether I need it or not. Again, you know, the key thing here is all these features are great, but they're not for everyone. I often use the analogy of a manual versus automatic transmission with a car. Sometimes you like a manual because it gives you full control. Sometimes it's really nice to have an automatic transmission and just step on the gas. And in some ways, you know, I think you'll find as you look into MVC and compare it with web forms is more of an automatic transmission. Lots of benefits come with it. You get a lot of features for free. MVC is a little bit more of a manual transmission in the sense of you're actually changing the gears manually. With that comes some additional control. And depending on your temperament as a developer, you can choose one or the other. You can use both actually in the same project. So you can actually have a single application that uses both MVC and WebForms if you want. And obviously you can choose, depending on your project, which one you want to use. Again, they all build on top of the same core ASP.NET runtime. Just to make things more interesting, we're also enhancing ASP.NET WebForms. I'm not going to talk about it much today other than this slide. But one of the things we are doing with WebForms is continue to enhance it, and with the new .NET 4 release that's coming out this year, one of the things that we are doing, in addition to adding kind of more control features, is we are actually adding a bunch of capabilities to it that do actually give you a little bit more control in the web forms model. It addresses some of the things that people in the past have not liked about web forms, and frankly, so things like better control over your ID support on the client. Much more granular view state control, so you can actually turn off view state for a page and then just turn it on for individual pages or individual controls. Routing integration, so you get the same SEO benefits. CSS-based rendering by default for all controls. And a bunch of data mining and other kind of enhancements. So, again, we are investing heavily in web forms in addition to MVC. The perfect world later this year, you have a hard choice because there's two great models. They both are really good. You, as a developer, basically can pick whichever one feels best for your workflow, but hopefully you find both give you everything you need. So with that, let's go ahead and get started. If you want to download MVC, you can go to www.asp.net/MVC, and I'll talk a little bit later at the end. Also, there's a tutorial that I've written called the Nerd Dinner Tutorial that's available on that page on the learning section you can download as well. That's about a 160-page kind of book tutorial that you can walk through. I'm going to spend most of my time in this talk explaining concepts and actually writing code. But at the end of it, after you kind of understand the big picture, you probably find downloading that tutorial and walking through that as well quite useful as well. So one other thing I will mention before we get started, in case it does happen. My computer decided to freeze twice, actually on the train ride down from London after 2 years of very trusty work. So I do have a backup machine that Mike Harmon kindly lent me. So if, for whatever reason, I do have another hardware failure during the talk, this is a little switcheroo, and fingers crossed that won't be required. But I thought I'd mention it before it happens, if it does happen. So with that, let's go ahead and get started. So as I mentioned, MVC is a separate download that you can download from that website, ASP.NET/MVC. It's about a 2 meg download. It installs on top of ES 2008 and works with .NET 3.5. It does work with Visual Web Developer Express, so you can use the free tooling with it. It does not modify any of the existing ASP.NET bits. So basically it just installs a couple of extra assemblies on your system, and it won't modify or break anything that's on your box. Once it's installed, you can go ahead, use Visual Studio to file a new project. And you'll find that in the web section of your Visual Studio here, there's a new option, which is ASP.NET MVC template. Click that. What do you want to name this? This is the hardest part of the talk. Sorry, what?
No, I saw iTunes.
Call it iTunes wannabe. Do they still want to be? I don't know. Anyway, any other names? Okay. So, we're going to create our iTunes wannabe site. One thing you'll notice about MVC when you create a project is, rather than create the project immediately, by default, it actually shows you the second dialog. And what the second dialog is doing is trying to shame you into doing unit testing. basically asks you, do you want to create a unit test project at the same time you're creating your web project? You can choose no, or if you choose yes, you can basically pick from a variety of different unit test frameworks. By default, we support Visual Studio's built-in unit testing framework that comes now with VS 2008 Professional and higher. But you can also download plugins for InUnit, MVUnit, XUnit, and you can drop in your own unit testing framework options as well. And when they're installed, they'll just be populated in the dropdown. You can also then name the testing project anything you want. By default, it's just project name .tests. I'm just going to stick with the VS test project option. And by default, you'll see now it creates for me both my MVC web application project and also a unit test project right below it. We're going to come to the unit test at the very end. And then we'll talk about a TDD workflow where you actually would use your unit test at the beginning. But I'm going to try to explain the rest of the application before we get to the test project per se. And let's hit F5 and hit run. It'll pop open our web server. And basically you can see here our application just ran. One thing you'll notice is that we actually don't create a blank project by default. Instead, what we try to do is kind of give you kind of the core basics of what we think a lot of applications have. So we basically have a home and about tab. We are using a master page to have consistent UI across the site. We provide a login and registration link, so you can basically log in as well as register accounts on the site. We basically have all the code to create accounts and do account management as part of the project template. Kind of just the basics, if you will, of kind of an application that you can sort of start to build from. If you want to, you can go in and complete all that, but by default, we kind of give you this rough structure. In the unit test project, then, we by default have a bunch of unit tests to cover all the functionality that's built into the core project template. And so if you want, you can actually go ahead and say test, run all tests and solution. And this will basically run the 27 unit tests that are built in to the test project. The benefit of this is even if you don't actually write any unit tests, simply by using the project template, you can tell your boss that you do have unit test coverage in your app. And so you have 90-some% code coverage there. So, anyway, that's kind of the default project template that you get. A couple of things about this project template we'll talk more about in a bit is this notion in the default project template, we have a whole bunch of directories that we create, and we're trying to use basically a model conventional configuration, where we basically have a couple of directories that we create by default for you. We'll drill into all these in a lot more detail in a bit. But a couple of the key ones here, just take a quick look at, is you'll see that we create by default a content folder. This is basically where you stick your CSS files as well as your images by default. We have a folder called controllers. This is where you stick your controller classes, which we'll talk about in more detail. This is basically the first endpoints and URLs in your application. We have a models folder, which is where you stick your model objects and all your data access. We have a scripts folder, which is where you stick your JavaScript files. By default, we install both ASP.NET MVC's client-side libraries and helper functions. We also install jQuery by default as part of the project template as well. As so you can immediately out of the box start using jQuery. And then we have a folder called views, which are basically where you stick your template files that will help generate your UI. Again, we'll cover all this stuff in more detail. But this is kind of the basic folder configuration that all MVC projects have by default. We don't require this folder configuration, so you can customize it to look however you want. But by kind of going down this kind of convention approach, one benefit is in all the books and any project that you kind of move on to, because it typically uses this convention, you can immediately kind of know where the code is and how it's structured and be able to find things more easily. Any questions on that? One of the other common questions people often ask me is, this models things in these other classes, do they all have to be in the same project, or can I actually create separate projects to pull out my data access or web service access into different projects? You absolutely can create multiple projects as part of your app. It doesn't require a single project. By default, and we'll do it for this demo, we're just going to stick our data access code in separate classes, but we'll put it in the same project as our app. But I can just as easily have a class library project and encapsulate that separately if I wanted to.
Scott?
Yeah?
Talk about separating data access and web services. What about if you've got a fairly big application and you want to separate it and by the name, for example, so you've got each of those projects has their own views and controls?
Yeah.
Maybe not now, but later, how do you go about disposing that if you want to choose a different direction?
It's a very good question. So the question here is, I talked about separating your data access to a separate project. What happens though, let's say logically you want to have, logically let's say you want to have a couple segments of your site, and so let's say I have my site is scotthu.com, and I want to have a couple of sort of, let's say, reusable applications or sections of the site. So let's say I have a blog, or I have forums. And so you can think of it as I kind of different subsections of the site. Is there a way that I could have one part of my site and then maybe have blog and forums be split out as separate projects? Was sort of the question, so that I can kind of have a modular layout of my project. You can do that today with MVC, although you have to do a lot of manual stuff. One of the big features that's coming, that will be hopefully in the first preview, so probably within the next 30 days of ASP.NET MVC 2, is this concept we call areas. And so the idea behind an area is that you can actually take the controller's views and any of the associated data for a portion of your site and split it out into a separate project. And so you could actually, instead of having one project that has all the controllers and all the views listed here, you could actually have multiple projects for the iTunes wannabe. So you have iTunes wannabe.blogs and have the controllers associated with that section as well as the views associated with that section in a completely separate project. And then at runtime, you actually can basically merge them together into a single logical application. So for everyone at this point, I have no idea what you just talked about, you can ignore that. But that's kind of an advanced feature that's going to come and show up with the first preview of MVC 2. So anyway, so create Foundry project, kind of walk through that default directory structure. Let's actually write some code, or talk about how this application works and kind of what an MVC workflow looks like. How many people have actually used an MVC framework before? Cool. So a lot of people have. So if you haven't, probably the biggest change, I'd say, this is true for all MVC frameworks as well as ASP.NET and MVC, between kind of a traditional web model, like say web forms or PHP or JSP, in a traditional model when a URL comes into the system, you typically map the URL to a file on disk. So in other words, if I have a products.aspx URL that comes in, by default, ASP.NET looks for a products.aspx file on disk and runs the code in that file in order to process the request. And again, that's true for PHP, JSP, any other web technology as well. In an MVC world, a web MVC world, things are kind of inverted slightly. Instead of a URL mapping to a file on disk, instead a URL maps to a class, and typically to a method on a class. And in an MVC world, that class is typically called a controller, and the actual method on the controller that executes is called an action method. And basically, that method gets first crack at the request. It can go ahead and do validation, it can handle input, go to a database, And then later, when it wants to render something, you either render it directly, or it can take advantage of a view template, which is a markup file, in other words, an ASPX file, to actually generate the response back. So it's a slightly different world. So let's actually see some examples of that in action. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to right-click on the controllers folder, and I'm going to use the add controller command that MVC projects have built in by default with Visual Studio. And when you select this, it brings up a dialog called add controller. Notice the name is already selected, so we can just start typing, you don't have to use the mouse. But what you can do is you basically give a name of a controller class. So I'm going to call this simple controller. Hit OK. And it's going to basically add a new file in the controllers folder for me called simple controller. And the simple controller class basically derives from a controller base class, and by default just has a single method called index within it. And I'm going to change index. We're going to take advantage of action results in a bit, but to start off with, I'm just going to keep this simple. Does anyone have any message they want to say to the room? Hello world. Great. Just to be different, yeah. So basically I have a method here called index. It's returning a string, and the string is hello world. So let's actually run our project. And so here's our default app. What I'm going to do is I'm going to type in, change the URL. And so you can see the URL here is http://simple. And you'll notice that the HTML that came back is called hello world. So what just happened? So basically, as I mentioned, in MVC world, when a URL comes into the application, we don't look for a file on disk. Instead, we typically map the URL to a class and then call a method on the class. By default, the convention-based approach that we use in the default template, and we'll see how we can change that in a little bit, is that we look at the first segment of the URL, so in other words, the slash simple, we map to a class. And so in this case here, simple map to simple controller. If it was slash foo, it would map to foo controller. So whatever it is, you basically just prefix controller on it, we'll activate that class, and that class gets first crack at processing the request. Now, by default, the method that we map to, by default, we look for a method called index, if it exists. Again, you can change the default, but by default, slash simple will map to the simple controller, and specifically an index method on it. And right now, I'm just returning back a string, and by default, that will get rendered back to the browser. I can change this, and change this to be, say, simple slash say hello. And I can change, you wouldn't say hello world. So let's change this to be something else. Another method name?
Goodbye.
Goodbye. There we go. Say goodbye. Goodbye. I just spoke goodbye. Anyway.
Goodbye, cruel world.
Oh, yes, goodbye, cruel world. slash simple, slash goodbye. What happened there?
Say goodbye.
See? And it's interactive debugging for lots of people.
It's great.
As you can see here, we have simple slash say goodbye, and we have goodbye cruel world. And so again, basically first segment maps to class name, second segment maps to method name by default. And we could add any number of these methods that we wanted to, just to keep making life interesting. Now the other thing we can do with these methods is we can add parameters to them. So let's say instead of saying goodbye cruel world, we could actually say have a parameter called name. And I can say goodbye name. Now, a little gotcha, if you're security conscious, is you don't usually want to just spit back values that an end user enters. We do actually do some automatic protection, but just to be fully secure, I'm going to encode this with HTML, so you can't do cross-site scripting attacks with this code. And now if I go ahead and say simple slash say goodbye question mark equals Scott, it'll say goodbye Scott.
Scott, could you say a bit more about the security angle? Because this could be a return to the old SQL injection problems that the old ASP had.
Sure. Basically, by default, everything that gets sent to us, we actually leech in on the code. Or actually, we will look to see whether there's any angle brackets in it, and we'll basically throw an exception if you try to stick something in there. So if you said, for example, goodbye Scott, angle brackets, script, by default, we'll actually say, hey, a potentially dangerous request was detected, Scott script, and prevent your code from running.
What about SQL?
Generally, if you, we'll see a little bit later on when we use link to SQL and in our data stuff. By default, in .NET, we'll actually do SQL encoding for you. Now, if you manually construct a SQL query and turn off all the defaults and run it, then you're done. But that would get you in trouble. But by default, the code will write here. We'll do the SQL encoding for you. So any questions on there in terms of how we map query string parameters? So basically, by default, you can have any number of these things here that you want. So if I want to say int num times, I can do that.
What sort of data types can you put, say, string in there? Is there any restrictions on it?
Good question. So the question is, what type of data types can you put in there? Could I pass a product out or something more complex? The cool thing is you can pass any type of data type you want. Out of the box, we'll support both simple types like this, and we'll also support complex classes. And a little bit later on, when you do form editing, I'll actually take a product object and pass it in as a parameter. ASP.NET also has a mechanism we call model binding, and so you can register your own handlers for any data type to handle serialization and deserialization for all the form inputs. So yeah, so basically, you can be as complex a parameter type as you want. And we'll talk about that more in when we talk about form editing.
What happens if you don't supply all the parameters?
Good question. So what happens if you don't supply all the parameters? So for example, we say int num times. So let's edit this again. We're getting an error because basically by saying int num times, we're saying we assume, or we're basically making an assumption that num times always has to be there in the parameter type. Now, the reality is a lot of times you have optional parameters, and so you might wonder, how do you handle optional parameters? How many people are familiar with nullable types? So it was a new feature introduced in .NET 2. The idea behind a nullable type is basically, in addition to being a number, you can have another state, which is null. And the way you basically declare a nullable type in C# is you add a question mark after the data type, so in question mark. This basically makes a statement that says, num times can either be there, in which case set the value, and if it's not there, mark it null. And now when you hit refresh, it works.
So a string is a reference type, so it's always nullable. How can you change that so that it will not work if you don't supply the name?
So you want to make it like a required? How would you make it required? Well, there's a couple different ways you can do it. You'll see a little bit later on when we talk about routing. You can mark certain fields if you want to as required. And we'll talk about a little bit with form validation when we do form updates. I'll show some validation techniques and look at adding required strings and how you can do that way.
Yeah. Where do non-existent URLs get rooted?
Good question. So the question is, what about non-existent URLs? So in other words, let's say I said foo. You'll notice by default when you turn on a 404 error saying it's not there. When we look at routing, you'll see there's actually a way you can handle that. It's purely based on the rules that you configure. But out of the box, we'll just return a 404 HTTP error if the URL you're going to doesn't exist.
Is that in
webconfig?
Is that in webconfig?
By default, your URL systems are actually, the routing rules are not in web.config, they're instead in the app.config, or the global.sax. But I'll walk through that in a little bit. You can, if you want to, you can store it externally in the config files as well.
If I had the name in there and I had submitted the form and also had name, would it get confused?
Good question. So the question is, will it use both query string as well as form data? The answer is yes. And the question is, what is the priority of it? The priority of it is, ASP.NET has a request.params collection. And so the priority is actually whatever the request.params collection is. I'm not entirely sure which one it is. I think form will take priority over query. But we can try it out during the break. you can override the priority if you'd like to. So it is overrideable at the language level. But I think the default is that. Cool, okay, anyway, so basically, again, high level is URLs map to classes called controllers, and then basically, map to methods, and then you can basically have any parameter you want be passed into it. So that's been kind of the basics in terms of how URL routing works. So, in the sample I've written so far, the simple hello world controller sample, right now we're actually returning HTML effectively as a string from the methods, which works really great in a simple hello world demo, but isn't really how you'd want to build a large app for a variety of reasons. One is constructing the HTML manually would be a real pain. It also starts to embed kind of concepts of UI directly within your code, which means that the app ends up being fairly unmaintainable going forward. And so one of the things that you often hear people talk about from a patterns perspective is this concept of separation of concerns. And the idea there is that you actually segment out the different tasks that your application is doing into different components, and you don't blend those tasks together except in very discrete interfaces or endpoints between those components. And separation of concerns is typically one of the things that in a model view controller architecture people really like, because it actually kind of forces you to separate out those different tasks and kind of mandates that you actually do it in a certain way. So specifically, in a web-based MVC, and with ASP.NET MVC in particular, typically the workflow that happens is URL comes in, controller gets activated, gets first crack at parameters, it's able to go off and get data. It actually includes all of the user input handling logic and typically activate all the data logic within the application. It then basically grabs all of the data that's going to be needed in order to generate a response. And then what it typically does not do is send back the response directly. Instead, what it does is it packages up those variables and passes it off to what we call a view template, which will actually generate the HTML back. So effectively, you separate out the logic for input handling, for data access, in the controller, and then you have all the actual HTML generation encapsulated within a view template, and the controller simply passes to the view template what it needs in order to generate that HTML back. So let's look at that in action here. So let's work on our say goodbye method. Right now, again, we're embedding all this stuff directly within here. Let's change this, and so we're going to say view data message is equal to this. And a couple things we're going to do. One is, notice I'm going to get rid of this HTML stuff as part of the line. The reason I'm doing it is that really belongs in my view template. That's presentation generation logic. That literally doesn't belong in the controller. What I'm doing instead now is I'm basically just generating a string, and I'm noting storing it inside this dictionary called view data. This is basically a late-bound way that I can actually pass variables to a template, and I can basically use any key that I want in order to actually generate the messages or save different values. To actually indicate that I want to render a template, I'm then going to change this method from returning a string to instead returning what's called an action result type. This can be like a redirect, this can be a file, or in this case here, I'm going to return back a view template. Called save goodbye. And so what this is basically saying is, after you've populated this view data dictionary with a bunch of data, render a view back using the say goodbye template file, which we'll create in just a second. It'll get passed all the data that's in the view data. It can then construct its response and send HTML back. Make sense? So again, you're separating out the actual logic from doing action from the actual HTML generation. We'll look how to clean this up in a little bit, but this is sort of a simple little world here. To generate, and so the, actually let's just run this and get in here. So what you're going to see here when we run this is, it's basically said, hey, the view template say goodbye that we just tried to render couldn't be found. One of the things you'll notice is, again, we're using kind of a convention-based approach. By default, ASP.NET MVC search for a template in the following four locations. So by default, it looks in the views folder, and it looks for a simple directory or folder underneath the views folder, and it looks for a file called savegoodbye.spx. It also looks for an ASDX version if it can't find the ASDX. it can't find it in the simple folder, it then looks in the shared folder and tries to find it there as well. And we haven't created it, which is why it throws this friendly error. Now, I could manually create simple folder underneath views and stick a file in there, or one thing you can do with the VS tooling support is just right-click inside a controller method, hit add view, and this will automatically infer based on what the method name is and what the class name is, where it should put the file, and I can override it, but by default, I'll just hit add. And this will actually create for me automatically now a simple folder and a say goodbye template file within it. As part of that dialog, it asks me whether or not I want to inherit from a master page so I can have a consistent look and feel across my site. By default, I just hit OK and hit yes. You can turn that off if you want. The master page for the site, by default, lives inside the shared folder, and it's called site.master. So by default, this is being based on top of that master page, which defines the outer chrome of the site. And what I can do inside here is I can just say view data message, hit refresh, and now my controller, my simple controller is getting called, it's passing in a name value, name is populating my view data, the template is rendered, the template spitting out the message in that appropriate location. Because it's based on the master page, it picks up the site.master of the site and integrates as part of that experience.
So it's not case sensitive. You had a message as comfortable in the code.
It's not case sensitive apparently. we'll look at it in just a second on how we can actually do an alternative approach, which is case sensitive.
Can you use web control inside of ASP?
Yeah, good question. So the question is, what can you use inside this file? So right now I'm using an anchor bracket percent equals. Question was, can I use like a web control or some other mechanism inside there as well? You technically can use web controls inside there. What you're going to find out is a lot of web controls are what we call postback aware or take advantage of postback. That postback feature won't work when they're activated through a controller in an NDC world. For controls like repeater, even like data gridded read-only mode, you can actually use them inside of view.
And data grid, for example?
Data grid you can actually use in read-only mode. We'll look at a few other, what we do is we call kind of HTML helper functions, which are kind of like controls. We'll look at those in just a little bit, and they do provide a lot of that functionality, so you don't have to manually create all the logic.
Right.
Yeah. Again, going back to the, you know, some people say, hey, I don't like that. You know, it goes back a little bit to the automatic manual transmission. Some people say, like, hey, I hate abstractions that get in my way. I really, really, really want to control the HTML. That's one of the benefits of the NDC world. If I want to have the data grid paging and editing and place things for me, you know, that's kind of one of the benefits of the WebForms world. That typically is, you know, at the end of the 2 hours, you say, I don't really like the idea of doing error at percent equals inside my view. That might be a sign.
Taking the best of both worlds.
Yeah, we are going to try. You know, we are trying to blend the best of both worlds. Yeah. Question back there.
So, if the encoding came on the view level versus on the controller level?
That's a good question. The question is, from a security perspective, should you put the encoding inside the controller or inside the view or both? It's sort of interesting. It's probably personal preference. I don't know if there's necessarily a one right answer. You certainly could put it inside there as well. One of the things you'll see with NDC2 is we are going to have a few helper functions for doing encoding. And what we're looking to do for ASP.NET 4 later this year is possibly introduce a new syntax that automatically encodes by default. And so you don't actually have to write any code, you just do anchor percent, and we're debating furiously what that third symbol is. And that'll do auto encoding for you.
Is there a way to avoid strings?
This is good. I'll pay you that money later. So the question was, the dictionary late bound thing, don't like the strings. Okay, well, let's fix this one first. So I mentioned we do kind of this convention-based approach by default. So in this case here, I'm specifically saying render the say goodbye template. Now, for the default case, though, what we typically recommend is just have your view templates match your action methods. And so in this case here, say goodbye is the same here. And so what you can do is you can actually not have to specify this at all and just say return view with an empty parameter. And by default, it'll pick up the action name and use that. So all I can do is I can delete that string, hit refresh, and everything still works. That's kind of, I did it explicitly because a lot of times when you show the default thing, it throws people. But you can actually, if your action method is the same name as your view, you don't have to specify it. You can just say return view, and it'll pick that by default. That's typically what I'd recommend doing. It does. Let's see. So if I do this and I do rename. Oh, look at that. Variable 2. It's pretty impressive. No, I didn't miss that. Simple 2, then renamed. Let's change this back. Rename. Oh, that was good. I'd ask them to play the future, but they didn't. Cool. So the question here at the beginning of before the question, though, was, so this view data dictionary, it's kind of a late-bound way of specifying values. Is there any way to do it strongly typed? So instead of saying view data message, is there any way to say like view data dot message? And that way, when you're doing refactoring or when you're doing compilation, you can compile time checking of your results. And the answer is yes. Basically, the way this works is if you want to, you can also create a class that we call a view model class. So let's call it the say goodbye view model. You can name it whatever you want. And we're just going to say string message. And we'll say none times. And so what I'm doing here is I'm just using the C# automatic property syntax to create a class that has two properties, one called message, one called none times. What I'm going to do inside my say goodbye method here is, so the idea behind this class is it's going to basically encapsulate everything that my view needs in order to actually generate its HTML response. So I can put any number of properties I want within that. What I can then do is come down here and say simple view message view model, and I'll call this view model is equal to that. And I can then say view model dot message is equal to that. And I can say view model dot num times is equal to, and remember I'm passing in a nullable num times. A little trick that a lot of people don't know about is this operator called the coalescing operator. And what this basically is saying is question mark, is if numTimes is a nullable type, assign the value of 0. And so this basically converts the nullable to a fixed integer based value. I can then choose to pass this say goodbye view model class to my view template by just passing it to the view helper function. Questions? Sorry, yeah.
The nullable type has also got a get value or default in it. Instead of doing the double question mark, you can just say num times dot get value or default.
You basically say get value or default. This is very useful if you want to change it to be different than 0. But yeah, you're right, absolutely right. The other thing I'll give a little secret, Tim's here, so he's going to write an article about it. But one of the things you can do actually in C# 4 as well as VB, or actually VB already has this, is optional parameters. And so you'll also be able to say int num times equals 0, starting with ASP.NET MVC2, and will automatically use the optional parameter syntax for citing. Yeah.
So the class name,
sorry, you said that for the class name, do you need to have controller? Yes. For the controller class? Yeah, it's a good question. The question is, do you have to have a simple controller as the name? Could just be simple. You can actually have change it to be whatever you want. By default, the defaults are registered to look for a simple controller class. But if you want to substitute controller for a different string, everything's overridable. But in general, we recommend is keep the defaults unless there's a good reason to change it. Because the nice thing with the defaults is a lot of stuff just flows naturally. And anyone that you bring in that knows ASP.NET MVC to your project will kind of instantly be familiar with it.
Do
you need to include?
Do we need to include anything else if you change the name?
Well, if you change the name of the controller to something else, what you do is you would at the application level just change the default string that you search for. I think you override a method or something at the global next apps. But yeah, you don't need to change much else. Yeah. So anyway, I have this view model here. I'm setting some properties to it. The last thing I'm going to go ahead and do is go into my view template here, and I can still access this data late bound. Or inside my view template, the other option I can do is I can change my inheritance to instead inherit using a generic-based model where I pass in the view model data type being passed to my template. And so I can say, what is this project called? iTunes wannabe. Let's say goodbye. And when I do this now, I can change this from being view data in a late-bound way to instead saying model dot. It models a strongly typed object that we add on the page. And you notice that now it has the message and none times values for my say goodbye vModel class. And so I could just say, spit that out. And then just to make this a little richer, I could say, for in I equals 0, oops, 0, I is less than model dot none times, I plus plus. And now I'm going to run this. By default, because I'm not passing num times in, it's not going to say anything. If I say num, oops, and num times equals 55, it now has 55 goodbye Scots being output on the page. Make sense? So this gives you strongly typed, this will give you, if I mark it as a property that doesn't exist, what's nice is I'll actually get a compile time error instead of a runtime error. There is an option in your project template where you can go in and cause ASP.NET to compile your views when you do a build. And so if you're working on a project, you can actually get build time validation of all your view code. And then the other nice thing is, obviously, you get full refactoring and IntelliSense support.
Yeah. Because I feel sorry for DB programmers, just check whether the syntax for that inherits attribute is language sensitive, because that's a C-sharp generic type.
Good question. I don't know. No, I think that is. I'm not 100% sure. I'm not 100% sure, actually. I'm not going to guess. I know we debated it. I don't remember whether that was an option.
Change it to DB and see whether you get a red squiggly on the line.
We'll do that in the break. We'll do that in the break. Yeah.
What's the recommendation for
binding
views to multiple objects?
Okay, so the question is sort of in terms of binding views to multiple objects. Typically, what I recommend is I typically like this view model pattern where you do the strongly typed. And I typically create a separate view model either for on a per action level perspective, or if it's actually shared across, or if a lot of the action methods work on the same data, share them across the controller layer. And then typically what I recommend doing is keeping your views as dumb as possible. So in other words, don't have any logic at all inside your views. Instead, have your view model class have, if it becomes a Boolean that's going to output a string, stick a string here, not a Boolean, and instead use your controller to set all the values, and then have your views go ahead and just render it directly. And this can have sub-properties if you want to, including complex types. So you can make the view model as big as you want in terms of what you pass. When we get to the very end, when we talk about testing, one of the things you'll find is that this approach ends up being pretty flexible because you can write your unit test against your controller. You can test the view model being returned. And you never actually have to render any HTML in order for your unit test to run. So it makes it very easy to go ahead and test your application in a completely automated way.
Have you done it in your
Nerd Dinner? Yeah, in my Nerd Dinner tutorial, I do that as well. My view models are fairly simple in the Nerd Dinner tutorial, but I do use the Nerd Dinner. I use the view model approach. And if you want, there's also the syntax of like. You can also use this approach where you can sort of say, use the initializing sort of syntax that's new in C# 3. So that also works from a, should work, that also works from a language perspective. And so sometimes I actually find it's useful to use this approach to kind of concisely initialize new models, because mostly you're just setting properties on it. So that approach fully works as well from a syntax perspective.
Maybe generic.
Your new models can be generic, so they can inherit from other types. Any standard CLR object, you can do anything you want to it.
Fast question.
Yeah.
Do you play using the var variable? Say goodbye,
new model, and stuff. Yeah, it's a good question. So, one of the things you can do in C# 3 is you can either specify say goodbye, new model, or you can just say var, new model. This is identical from a runtime perspective. So, var in C# does not mean dynamic object. In C# 4, there is actually a new dynamic keyword that does mean dynamic object. Var simply means you infer the type based on its first usage. And so in this case here, view model ends up, if you actually do IntelliSense, view model doc, you still can do full IntelliSense. I typically use the var, but since it sometimes throws people, that's why I explicitly did it here. It just makes it a little bit more concise. We'll use that a little bit later when I do my data stuff. Okay, we'll keep, we're going to keep going and we'll do the break. We'll see if we can do the break. So let's talk about model stuff. So we're done with model view controller. We've introduced controllers. We've introduced views. Let's now talk about the model. In an MVC world, model typically refers to not someone who gets paid for pictures, but rather objects that represent the data within your application. We've talked about view model in the past, that sort of data that your view needs in order to render. Sometimes people call this domain model, which is sort of independent. Yeah, it's called model. And so it typically includes both the data, oftentimes the validation, and sometimes specific domain logic for your data that you work against. So that's what the N stands for in MVC. So let's go ahead and your iTunes WannaBe app. Let's actually introduce a set of model classes and build a controller that uses them. So you can use any data access technology with ASP.NET MVC. So if you like linked to SQL, you can use that. Linked to entities, you can use that. Data sets, you can use that. In Hibernate, you can use that. Subsonic, you can use that. I'm using a technology I didn't mention.
Entity dispensers.
Which ones are?
Entity spaces.
Entity spaces. You can use entity spaces. You can use any of those. Oh, there's some other one there. What I'm going to do is I'm going to use linked to SQL here. And so I'm going to say I'm going to do two things. First, I'm actually going to add a database in my app. And I'm going to basically say, let's add a linked SQL set of classes for my Northwind database. And this is going to basically open up the Northwind designer for me inside Visual Studio. I'll connect to my SQL Express Northwind database that I just added into my project. Starting out for the first time, there we go. And I'm going to basically just model right now the categories and the products objects within, or tables within that database. If you haven't used linked to SQL before, it's an object relational mapper. Basically allows you to map classes to tables and have individual properties of those classes mapped to columns within those tables. And so here, I'm basically creating a class that maps to the categories and the products table. Just by hitting save there, I now have all of the metadata necessary to map back and forth between the database, and basically now write some data access code. And to do that, let's create a new controller. We'll call it products controller. Add. And let's then write some code against our database. So to work with, when I created that linked to SQL set of classes, it created a Northwind data context class for me, which allowed me to use the product and the category class that was modeled using my database. I stuck that file into the models folder, which means that it actually has a namespace called iTunes WannaBe.models. So I can use the control dot, and I can just say automatically add a using statement to my class. I think I'll say new Northwind and create that class. And then I'm going to basically create two methods, one called products. And what I want to do for the products is I want to basically get back all the categories for my database. And so I'll say northwind.categories.toList. This will bring back a sequence of category objects for all the unique rows, category rows within my database. And I'm going to basically pass this to a view as my view model. So to create my view, I can do a couple things. One is I'm just going to say add view. You'll notice here there's an option that if I'm creating a strongly typed view, so in other words, if I'm using a view model based approach, I can say create a strongly typed view. And instead of having to go into the ASPX and manually change that view page declaration, I can instead just pick a class from a list of all the classes in my product. So the project, so in this case here, I'm going to say base it on as a category. And I can choose to either make it empty or in this case make it derived from as a list. Based approach. Right now, let's actually just make this be empty. We'll hit add. It's going to basically add this to the project. I'm going to do one quick change, though, is I'm going to say enumerable, since I'm returning a sequence of these instead of just one. So I'm going to manually change that. To display this, since coffee is standing between this demo, or this demo is standing between coffee, I'm just going to manually copy that. This is just going to, I'm just adding a ULLI list. And within this list, I'm using a helper function called HTML.ActionLink, which is going to render the category name that gets passed in as part of my model. So remember, I'm getting passed in a sequence of category objects. And so if you look at IntelliSense here, I do a for each var item in model. The item is going to be a type category. And so you'll notice if I said item dot, I see category ID, category name, description, etc. So in this case here, I'm using HTML action link, which we'll see in just a second. This is going to generate back a HTML hyperlink. It's going to use the category name as the display name that users see. Last thing I'm just going to go ahead and do is in my CSS file, I'm going to add few CSS entries here. And last but not least, I'm going to add a file product image, just going to give me a simple turd image to use. And now I go back and run my site. I can say slash products. This will go off to my database, get back a sequence of categories, pass those categories to a view. I'm doing a for each over that, generating a ULLI list, which is displaying the category names, and it's hyperlinking. We'll see this in a second. It's going to hyperlink to a separate action on my products controller, which we're going to build in a second, which when clicked, will go to product slash browse, and then pass the category names of parameter. Make sense? Just covered a lot of ground there. But you can see, you can use source. This is what the generated markup looks like. So again, it's a ULLI sequence, hyperlink with the text value, and href that's going to go to product files, question mark, category equals beverages. So let's now implement the beverages, the browse method here. So to do that, copy paste. And we'll say browse. Remember, we're going to say product slash browse, question mark, category, equals say beverages as an example. So we're going to say browse stream category. A little bit later on, we're going to look at URL rewriting and make that a little cleaner, but we'll keep it as query string for right now. I can basically say, let's get back all the products in that category. And so I'm going to use link to SQL, or SQL, or link syntax, same thing, that, whatever. Link syntax. So I say from p in northwind.products. Where p.category.categoryName is equal to the category that's been passed in. And I'll say select p. So going back to Tim's comment, this will be automatically SQL encoded, so you don't have to worry about an injection attack. And then we'll say products.toList to pass that products as a list to my view. And I can say add view. I can choose to scaffold it. We'll see an example of this more a little bit later on. So if I hit add view, this will actually automatically generate a table view for me. So now when I run this, it's generating back sort of a table listing of products. We're going to come back to that in a little bit, so if we get excited, I'm going to delete it.
Scott?
Yeah?
Is there a reason why you're using to list rather than just sort of having it over as an enumerable?
Ah, good question. Well, kind of, yeah. So what I'm doing, tell you what, let me defer that question to when I talk about paging, and then that's why I'm doing it, is I'm deferring it. But I'll talk about it more when I talk about paging. It might make more sense then. So anyway, so I'm just going to paste in a slightly different view here, which is not working. There you go. So this is basically just doing a for each over my products here. There we go. And so you can see now when I click on a different category, I have, I'm seeing the products in that particular category. So instead of saying browse, how about we actually change this to be browse products or something. If I wanted to, I could pass in the category name obviously as a parameter. That's a sort of simple controller products working with a model. Got two methods, index as well as browse. Going off, getting some data, passing the data to the view renders it out. Makes sense? Any questions on that?
Yeah. Notice you always pull two lists when you pass the products to the view.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to do that.
You actually don't need to do that. So actually, I will talk about this a little bit now. First part now. So if I did like just this and I actually passed in the products, you'll notice when I run the app, everything continues to work. And so I do products, everything continues to work. The reason it continues to work is what's returning from this link sequence is actually an iQueryable sequence of products. And the way iQueryable works is it does something called deferred execution. So until you first access the, try to iterate over the results, that's when we'll actually go off and hit the database. And so the reason I was doing two lists here was I wanted to make sure that I actually hit the database inside my controller, as opposed to when the view iterates over the iQueryable, then it would hit the database there. So I wanted to push the data access in my controller, or the actual hit to the database in my controller call, as opposed to the view. That's going to come in a little bit more helpful when we do testing, because it basically means that I'm actually testing, not that I'm getting back a queryable, I'm getting back the actual result.
About the case where you've got a reference to something and you follow that inside your view,
mm-hmm.
and something would then be later loaded, you've still got...
Yes, so one of the things you can do with like into SQL and with any kind of deep graph is do lazy loading, which means the first time you access it is when you hit the database. I go back and forth on lazy loading with views. Like, there are ways with SQL where you can force load everything at once. The reality is sometimes you don't actually need the things, though, when you generate the UI, and so you take a performance hit of by doing it up front. You might not actually need it if you're not using it. So generally, though, the best practice is you want to avoid hitting a database from within your view. But I find there's sometimes little gray areas. I'm not too super religious on that, and there are a couple gray areas where lazy loading, I think, does make some sense.
If you explicitly control the lifetime of your context, so you're using this side of the controller, then what's the lifetime of that when you hit your view? Is the data context still around?
There's a method called dispose that you can implement on your controller, which can be where you explicitly close your context or do cleanup if you want to. You could also do a using statement and basically force close the connection at the end and just have the data. So you absolutely could do that.
So if you wrap all of that in one method, so using including the view method,
yep.
Just all of that page code run inside that view method. So
I believe so.
That's not fair.
Yeah, it depends on your data access technology. I think with Link to SQL it would probably all occur. In this case here, I'm doing all my data code in the controller. So I'm never hitting the database from within my view.
Just kind of thinking from a testing point of view, wouldn't it be nice to be able to actually examine whether the right query was generated rather than whether the right data came back? Because if you require the data to come back, you need the database to come back, you want to test it.
part two will explain all. At the very end, we'll talk about in part two how do we test it on the database. Speaking of part two, it sounds like coffee is actually available. So what we're going to do is we'll break for coffee. I'm actually running a little slower than I used to, so I'm wondering, can we maybe get a 20-minute break?
Back in
at,
say, on the hour.
Yeah, so what we'll do is we'll break for coffee now, and then we'll start up again at 3 o'clock and continue ahead here. So thanks a bunch.